Hello and welcome back to the Herbert Smith Freehills Tech Bites podcast. My name is Toby Eggleston, a partner in the Melbourne office, and joining me on this Sunday morning, Associate Mark Peters from our Sydney office. Morning, Mark.
Nice to be here, Toby.
What could be better on a Sunday morning?
Yeah, exactly what we all want to do.
Okay, the reason we are recording this emergency podcast, the Victorian government has released some pretty wide-ranging and substantial reforms to the stamp duty position in Victoria. Mark, why don't you give us an overview and then we'll step through who's in, who's out, and next steps.
Sounds good, Toby. Late last week, the Victorian government released the bill for the commercial and industrial property tax, which I've already heard affectionately described as the KIPT, or perhaps the CIPT, but we'll see which one of those sticks over the coming months. In short, what is proposed is that from the 1st of July this year, stamp duty on commercial and industrial property will be phased out and replaced with the CIPT. And essentially how that will work is that the next dutiable transaction or relevant acquisition, so that's in your direct transaction, in respect of the property, will be subject to stamp duty for one final time. And then 10 years after that final stamp duty transaction, there will become payable the commercial and industrial property tax. And that will be a year-on-year tax charged at 1% of the taxable land value. So that's the same land value that's used for land tax purposes. So the unimproved value of the land.
That is a massive change to the way stamp duty has been collected over the years. Let's start with what's the type of property that is caught and what are some of the exclusions?
So the kind of property that will be captured is commercial and industrial property, and that is worked out based on Australian Valuation Property Classification Code. So these AVPCC codes are already recorded on people's land tax assessments as it's part of the Valuer General's valuation process for valuing property. So codes that are captured are in the 200s, 300s, 400s, and the 600s. And that generally represents the broad range of commercial, industrial, extractive industries, infrastructure, and utilities will all be captured by those codes. And also there is an additional inclusion for qualifying student accommodation. So there's been a decision made by the government that student accommodation for tertiary students that also meets the GST definition of commercial residential premises will be brought into the new system as well.
Okay. There are some specific exemptions, though, like in respect of aged care?
Yes. So the way those codes work is that a number of commercial residential type properties fall within a different code range. For example, retirement villages and aged care facilities appear to fall within the 100s range of codes, therefore would not be captured by the kinds of properties which would be exempt as being a commercial or industrial, even though I think it's very well recognised that from the perspective of an operator of a retirement village or an aged care facility, that's clearly a commercial pursuit rather than a residential transaction for them.
And without wanting to get too much into the weeds, living here in inner city Melbourne, I'm often riding my bike through the streets of Fitzroy and Collingwood, and there's often a shop on the bottom floor and a residence on the top floor. And how would those be classified if they're all on the one title?
So the bill has a solar primary use test to assist in those sort of situations. So the first port of call is always going to be the AVPCC code, but it is possible for one title to be allocated more than one code. In those circumstances, it'll come down to a solar primary use test to work out which one is the better descriptor of the property. And the kind of things that we expect will be taken into account for working out which is taken to be the sole or primary use is going to be relative floor size, the economic and financial significance of each use that the property is put to. Obviously, if you've got one relatively small dwelling and then a substantial commercial operation being carried on at the site, it's more likely that it may fall within the commercial side, whereas if the inverse is true, then it may fall within the residential aspect. But that's going to be case-by-case determination in respect of those mixed-use properties.
Okay, let's say we've got a property. What is the qualifying transaction that's going to bring us within?
So there's two ways that this can happen. The first is a qualifying dutiable transaction. So that picks up the existing concepts within the Duties Act. And The most basic of those that people would be familiar with is obviously the transfer of land. So if you have a qualifying dutiable transaction, and all relevant dutiable transactions are included in that, other than certain leases or the acquisition of economic entitlements, which really arises only under development type agreements, so it's not that common. Once you have one of those transactions that are captured, the question then becomes, has a qualifying interest in the underlying land been acquired? And that is essentially an interest of 50% or more. So if you've got a transfer of 100% of the land, you've plainly met that 50% threshold. If you've got a transaction that is 60% of the land, you're also within that. However, an interest of less than 50% will not be captured there. And the final sort of catch-all before the property will enter the new regime is whether or not that transaction would have been eligible for an exemption under the Duties Act or otherwise eligible for a corporate reconstruction or consolidation relief type concession. So that means those sort of concessional transactions will not have the effect of changing the underlying tax characteristics of the land. So it's still possible to undertake restructures within a corporate group without bringing in property into this regime, perhaps unintentionally. The complexity that will be associated with this is also that landholder duty transactions can bring in land. So that includes your transactions where there's an acquisition in a company or a trust that also results in an indirect interest of 50% or more changing in the underlying land. And for anyone who has had any past experience with the landholder regime, you will know that there is quite sophisticated tracing rules, which can mean that a unit transaction or a share transaction in a company far up in the corporate structure compared to the entity which is actually holding the underlying land can result in landholder duty being payable. So it'll be necessary in those situations to not only be alive to the normal duty transaction implications of trading in the shares of companies and the units in trust, but also what impact is that going to have downstream to the underlying land that may be held by a business which you're a majority investor in, but don't actually have day-to-day control over how that business is operating. So there's going to be quite significant implications for that, for upstream transactions.
Yes, another matter to add to the ever-extending due diligence list. Okay, rules coming to effect with effect from 1 July 2024. So just to clarify, that is settlement of the transaction after 1 July 2024.
That's right. But there is a transitional rule which provides that if your transaction's pursuant to an arrangement or an agreement that predates the 1st of July, you will still remain subject to the old regime. So that won't bring in the property.
Okay. It's after 1 July. We buy a new property. What happens then?
So once you are within the scope and you know you have a qualifying transaction, you will then have the opportunity to either pay the property's final stamp duty liability as an upfront sum, or alternatively, to finance that final stamp duty liability through a government facilitated transition loan. And this is designed to smooth that final stamp duty payment out over the 10-year period. So that loan will be with interest, but it will be payable in 10-yearly installments over that transition period rather than having to front all of the stamp duty in one go. There will be guidelines released in due course by the Treasurer which will set out the circumstances where you will be eligible to obtain a transition loan. However, based on some of the material that's been published to date, we're expecting that participants will be able to access the transition loan where the purchase price of the property is less than $30 million and also where they're an Australian citizen or permanent resident or an Australian business. So it may not be open to foreign investors.
And just from reading your note, I note that the Treasury Corporation will also have a first ranking statutory charge over the land. Interesting to think about how that's going to interact with the bank's mortgage that they're taking. Do you have any insights on that, on how that statutory charge would interact with a bank's loan and security?
I think consistently with the approach for other state taxes, which can result as a statutory charge, it is first ranking. So there is the position that the government will be paid first in respect of whatever occurs. There is a process for the commissioner to go and register his charge. Otherwise, it just comes into existence under statute. So there is going to be that complexity in terms of whether or not banks will be comfortable with particular investors adopting to go down the transition loan regime as opposed to just paying the upfront stamp duty. But I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out and whether there becomes a more accepted way to do it. I think particularly also with your indirect landholder duty transactions, there may be some complexity there in terms of how they interact, particularly in situations if you have an upstream transaction which happens to be eligible to obtain a loan, and it is the underlying entity's land which will be subject to the statutory charge. So that's certainly going to make for some interesting situations if that is ultimately how this is applied.
Yes, fun and games for our banking and finance lawyers. Okay, so we bought the property, we've either got the loan or we paid the stamp duty up front. What happens then?
If you continue to hold the land into the foreseeable future, then after the 10-year period, you'll start paying the commercial and industrial property tax. If instead you decide to sell the land, then more fun and games apply in terms of working out what is the duty implications of that next transaction. So broadly speaking, there will be two buckets of situations where you have a subsequent sale of land after you've had your first transaction, which has brought the property into the new regime. The easy bucket is if that second transaction occurs at least 3 years after the original transaction, then no stamp duty will be payable on the subsequent transaction, provided that the land at that time is continuing to be used for commercial or industrial purposes. The other easy bucket is if the original transaction which brought the land into the regime was a 100% transaction, so it was just a buy and sell of 100% of the land, then the subsequent transaction will also not be subject to stamp duty, provided the qualifying use requirements are met. If instead, however, your first transaction was, say, a 60% acquisition of the land, and then there was subsequently a sale of that original 40% interest as well, duty would still be payable on that 40% component if that is within 3 years of the first transaction. Although that means there will be some sort of concessional regime for partial sales, it means that there will be some consideration around the timing of subsequent transactions and also managing some of the complexity that can flow from that if you've got property may or may not be subject to the regime depending on the precise timing that you choose to undertake the transaction or the precise percentage that is transacted in. So in short, there's the complexity associated with that, but it should all, I think, become clear over time as transactions actually begin to take place and people get familiar with the idea that if you wait 3 years, then there may not be any continuing, there may not be any additional stamp duty on the transaction. Whereas if you have fractional interests in land that are being transacted, the stamp duty position could be quite complicated.
Yeah, and just I think that's where you, so let's say we have a 60% acquisition and we hold it for 10 years. Presumably that brings 100% of the property within.
That's right.
So the existing landowner will also be subject to the CIPT going forward.
That's right. And I think the fact that your co-owner dealing with their interest in the land could potentially result in a change in your tax position going forward as well may mean that thought needs to be given to, as part of transaction structuring, the arrangements with co-owners about the circumstances when people can and can't exit, if there is a thought that will change the underlying tax characteristics of the land for the continuing investors.
Okay. So in respect to the actual tax itself, you said 1% of the unimproved value. Any other concessions there?
So the legislation has also included that there'll be a concessional rate for BTR properties at 0.5%. I think
so
there's
BTR,
still...
Yes,
build to rent properties. There's still some questions about precisely how that will work that I think needs to be played through, because ordinarily one would think a build to rent residential property was not considered to be commercial or industrial in nature. So I think there is a question about precisely how that will interact over time. But that point aside, the existing concessions for land tax that exist in Victoria will also apply to the new regime. So if you would be eligible for a land tax exemption, you will also be exempt from paying the CIPT.
And then, so we're in the regime, we've started paying the tax. Is there anything else we need to think about?
I think the key thing to take in mind as well is also that there is going to be introduced a new head of duty, alongside this being change of use duty. So this will apply where property that has already entered the new system is sold for a second time with a qualifying or commercial use, and then subsequently it ceases to be used for a industrial purpose or a commercial purpose. So perhaps an example of that may be where property is sold, it was formerly industrial, the acquirer has the intention to undergo a rezoning and use it for a residential development. Once that actual change of use occurs and it ceases to be used for commercial or industrial purposes, then there's an obligation on that property owner to notify the Victorian State Revenue Office within 30 days of that change of use. And there is also penalties that apply for failing to comply with the notification regime. So that's the first thing to keep in mind, is that we need to keep in mind what we're using the actual properties for. And if that changes, we need to notify. But once that notification occurs, there then becomes a question as to whether change of use duty is payable. And essentially, change of use duty is the duty which would have been payable on the previous transaction had it not had a qualifying industrial or commercial use. So if it had been residential, then it would have been subject to duty. So that is your base case as to what change of use duty will then become payable on the change of use. However, there is a reduction in that duty for every calendar year that passes since the original transaction at a rate of 10% per year. So practically, if you purchased the land and you would have had $1 million stamp duty liability if it had been residential, but it wasn't, it was captured by the new regime, 3 years later, the use changes, then you will be paying 70% of that original duty liability at that time. So $700,000 on that example.
So presumably, either wait 10 years and do your rezoning and then sell it, or don't do the rezoning but pass it on as industrial to the new owner who then formalises that approval.
Yeah, I think that will become part of the consideration as to precisely when the change of use occurs and whether the particular person who has acquired the land wants to be the person that actually pulls the trigger on that change of use, or whether they've only stepped in for the interim period and then will pass on the land to someone else for the purposes of them pulling the trigger on the final stamp duty amount. I think there'll definitely be questions around how that is structured and considered going forward, but also related to that, whether or not there is an advantage if the land has been held for some time to undertake that change of use before there's a change in ownership, because it may be that the stamp duty liability might be reduced by 70 or 80%, which may make the duty exposure much less than it would otherwise be.
Okay, well, that has been very insightful. Any key takeaways to wrap it all up, Mark?
Yeah, I think this is obviously a work in process at this stage, with the bill just having been released. It is intended that the Victorian State Revenue Office will be releasing further guidance over the coming months in the lead up to kick off. So I think it'll be very interesting to see what they come out with over the next period, because it's going to be obviously very critical in working out precisely whether or not being in the regime is favourable or not. So I think it's a watch this space at this stage, but the last thing I think I would say with it is there is still a number of aspects of the original stamp duty regime that remain present as a result of this change. So it isn't simply a abolition of commercial and industrial stamp duty. It's a bit more complicated than that in precisely how this will play out over time.
So you're not out of a job yet, Mark.
No, I'm still employed at this stage, Toby.
Good to hear. And for some foreseeable future, then.
Yes, I'm sure that given that property will only enter the new regime on it being transacted and there is still the final stamp duty to pay, I would expect we will be running with a dual system for quite some time.
We all love complexity in our tax laws. Perhaps not our listeners, but from an advisor's selfish perspective. Thanks for that, Mark. Any questions? I'd recommend listeners read our notes, which I'll link to in the show notes. Contact Mark or Ginny or any other members of our stamp duty team who will be able to assist. But on that note, thank you, Mark. That was great.
Thanks so much, Toby.
And thanks for listening.